Hello and welcome back to Halfway History. I'm your host, Jack Barabo, and welcome to episode 2, Ancient Egypt. I'm just going to begin by saying, like, I love ancient Egyptian history. It's not only interesting, but it's perfectly easy to follow. Unlike other eras in history, there is interconnected things, it's complicated. But what's nice, if you really want to get into history, is start with ancient Egyptian history. It's iconic, it's well known, quote unquote, and it's generally pretty linear. And that's just fantastic. There's all kinds of things you look for in history. War, prosperity, peace, trade, all of the good stuff is here. Egypt is named after the Greek Aegyptos, which is just the ancient Greek pronunciation of what the Egyptians called themselves, which is really hard to pronounce. It's Hapakuta, Hwtkaptah. And it's mainly, they call themselves after the city of Memphis. So that's what Memphis would have been in the ancient Egyptian language. So Egyptian culture is just well known today, and was really, really is one of the longest lasting cultures that we can like think about, other than maybe the Chinese or Japanese culture. Egyptian is one of the, if not the oldest culture on the planet. Its remnants are still seen today, and before the 1800s, especially the Victorian era, Egyptian culture was just seen as pagan, gross, and something of the old world. But once Britain conquered Egypt, especially from Ottoman rule, there was a huge boom in Egyptian culture. Egyptologists spreading up everywhere. Everyone wanted to know about Egypt and the lost civilization that it was. Egypt is very old, too. Evidence of overgrazing cattle on the land, which is now the Sahara Desert, dates all the way back to 8,000 BC. But we don't know historians don't know if they should really consider that the official beginning of Egypt. But we do know for sure hunter-gatherer nomads sought the cool water of the Nile, so they settled there sometime before 6,000 BC. But we really get into the good stuff once the written history started. And historians are pinpointing that somewhere between 3400 and 3200 BC, mainly beginning with the iconic hieroglyphic script. And then with this, you see the beginning of the Nakwadia culture around 3500 BC. This is also the time when mummification of the dead was beginning to be practiced, and early Egyptian cities were being founded. So the early history of Egypt can be divided. The history of Egypt can be divided into the early history, the Old Kingdom, intermediate periods, and the New Kingdom. And then, of course, later down the line with the Persians and the Greeks and then the Romans and then, of course, the Byzantines, which are arguably also Romans, and then the Arabs, and then what we know today. But we're just going to do ancient history. We're not going to touch anything. We're not going to touch Ptolemaic Egypt. So, let's just jump right in. So, we start with the North and the South Kingdoms, Upper and Lower Egypt. And it's a little strange, but Upper Egypt is South and Lower Egypt is North. It's oriented to how the river flows. So, the river flows North and, which is where we get the upper and lower. You know, upper being upstream and lower being, you know, downstream. So, the unification of the upper and lower kingdom is placed somewhere between, actually, I shouldn't say in between. It's either 3118 BC or 3150 BC. It's not quite sure, but we do know it was under the king Menes, or Mene, it's hard to pronounce. But it's kind of controversial, because we don't know if it was exactly conquered. That idea comes from an old Ptolemaic Egyptian historian who lived 4,000, if not nearly 5,000 years later. So it could be seen as royal propaganda for the idea of a conquerment, but it could have easily just been a union between nations. That's not quite established in history, unfortunately. The beginning of this, the pharaohs weren't really a thing. People were mainly considered kings and queens. And this is where the religion really starts. We're not going to get into the Egyptian religion. If we want to do a full episode of that, I think I'll easily be able to do that in the future. But it is well good to note that they thought that the king and queen were descendants of the gods. More specifically, Osiris and his sister, who was also his wife. It's kind of weird like that. Isis were the original monarchs. So then we begin that. Not much is known. It seems pretty stagnant, that history. That's where we get to the Old Kingdom. And the Old Kingdom is placed between 2613 and 2181 BC. And this is where we see architecture that honors the gods start to develop, and at least the increasing rate of it, such as the pyramids that we know of and the Great Sphinx of Giza. They were constructed within this period, yet the dates are not really known. But in 2670 BC, the first step pyramid was built and designed by chief architect. He was also a physician. I'm sorry if I pronounced this wrong, but Imhotep. I apologize if anyone knows that pronunciation. I totally screwed it up. That's my bad. That's on me. He was around from 2667 to 2600 BC. And he also wrote one of the first medical texts in history, describing the treatment of over 200 different diseases and arguing a case that diseases were caused by natural causes and not by the gods, which is very controversial because if you know anything about history, religion is very, very powerful. The Great Pyramid of Khufu was also built here, and it unfortunately is the last standing Seven Wonders of the Ancient World. And it was constructed during the reign of, Khufu, between 2589 and 2566 BC, with the pyramids of Khafre coming in at 2558 to 2532 BC. I'll also note this, that there was absolutely no evidence of the monuments of Giza, or any Egyptian monuments, at least from this period, that were built by slave labor. Nor is there any historical evidence to support the biblical book of Exodus. Slaves, I will admit, there is evidence of slaves, but they were mainly of other ethnicities and working in mines, which were south of where Giza is. The workers were actually well revered by Egyptian culture. Such as an example, at the workers at Giza, they were given rations of beer 3 times a day as their payment, as well as housing and the tools they need. They even had a level of provided health care, which is pretty clearly established and is kind of incredible if we really think about it. After this, though, we come to a period called the First Intermediate Period of Egypt, between 2181 and 2040 BC. This saw a decline in power in the central government following its collapse. Unfortunately, Egypt split, controlled by Hyrcanopolis in Lower Egypt and Thebes in Upper Egypt. The Theban king Mentup II, sorry if I mispronounced that one, who ruled between 2061 and 2010 BC, defeated the forces of Heracopolis. I know I'm definitely butchering that, and I apologize. And finally, he united the kingdom of Egypt under Thebes, which was, I mean, back to how it was, pretty much. The stability provided by Theban rule is allowed for extreme flourishment of Egyptian culture, and what begins as the Middle Kingdom. The idea of Egyptian culture really starts to grow here. This is seen as Egypt's classical age, when art and culture reached like their heights. Thebes became the wealthiest and most powerful city within the country. In fact, the first standing army was created in the Middle Kingdom somewhere between 1991 and 1962 BC, as well as some of the greatest of Egyptian literature and art was produced in the 13th Dynasty. However, the 13th Dynasty was weaker than the previous 12th Dynasty, and it was distracted by a ton of internal problems, which followed from the people of, it's pronounced the Hyksos, who were unknown origin. Most believe it's from the Palestinian region. They came in and they settled around the Nile Delta. And of course, being ancient history, there aren't super defined borders like there are today, where there's border patrol and stuff like that. There's none of that then. It's pretty, I'd say, rather open. And over time, they spread and they controlled much of Lower Egypt, at least by 1720 BC, rendering the Theban dynasty pretty much a vassal state. While the Hyksos, it translates simply to foreign rulers in Egyptian, were hated by the Egyptian people, they introduced many great improvements to Egyptian culture, such as the development of ceramic works, bronze, chariots, which are iconic with Egyptian culture, and the composite bow, and even the horse. Following this, though, the kingdom of Kush started to grow in power in southern Egypt, and was responsible for starting to subjugate Nubia and trying to kick out the Hyksos leaders of the north, or the lower kingdom, I should say, which wasn't really successful until Prince Amoz of Thebes, who lived between 1570 and 1544 BC, succeeded and finally unified the nation under Theban culture, which swiftly brought an end to the Middle Kingdom. The next period is known as the New Kingdom. Pretty nifty, right? Amos the First, who conquered the Hyksos lands, was issued in this era, which lasted between 1570 to 1069 BC, which saw great prosperity and a strong central Egyptian government, which was never really seen before. This is where we see the beginning of the title of Pharaoh coming to the Egyptian lexicon, if you will, and dynastic structure. Before, they were only really known as kings. And between 1504 and 1492 BC, Pharaoh Thutmose I consolidated power and eventually expanded the borders of Egypt as far south as Nubia, which is modern-day Sudan, and as far north as the Euphrates, which is in Syria and near Palestine. This prosperity led to many things, such as the development of varieties of beer, as well as the beginning of medical practices. If anything, this was more of a medical revolution around this time than anything else. I mean, heck, they seem to have practiced, and I don't want to say perfected, but became really effective. I shouldn't say perfected, but really established dentists and surgeons, and they were quite effective compared to what they were doing before. And they even began creating beer, which maybe isn't the cure-all, but they sure thought it was. Beer was prescribed to cure over 200 ailments. In 1343, Pharaoh Ahmed IV finally succeeded the throne, consolidated power, and even changed his name. He then renounced the old religion, going from a polytheistic to a monotheistic belief system. This really shaked up Egyptian culture, especially once he moved the capital from Thebes to Amarna, which further distanced himself from his beloved predecessors and the priests of the old religions. His religious reforms effectively cut the power of the priests and placed it in the hands of himself. The Amaran period, which was between 1353 to 1336 BC, saw the city grow and prosper, and polytheistic religious customs, of course, of the old religion, were banned. His son then takes over the throne and is probably the most recognizable Egyptian ruler today, that of Tutankhamun. He reigned from 1336 to 1327, and the reason he's probably the most recognizable is his tomb was found by the British archaeologists in 1922. He pretty much put the pedal to the metal in reverse on his father's reforms, bringing the capital back to Thebes and removed all references to his father's one deity. He also restored many of the ancient temples and tombs and was beloved by the clergy. But the greatest ruler, perhaps, of the new kingdom was that of Ramses II, also known as Ramses the Great, from 1279 to 1213 BC. He began big public works project and built many temples and many ancient sites that are iconic and synonymous with ancient Egyptian culture. He was beloved by his people and really saw, yet again, another flourishment of Egyptian culture. In fact, the Battle of Kadesh, which is recorded as one of the first battles in human history, was fought under his reign. Well, I should say battles recorded in human history. And he even signed the first treaty, that being the Treaty of Kadesh, signed in 1258 BC. And other than that, Egypt enjoyed pretty much undisturbed peace, allowing for serious, serious growth. I mean, near the end of his reign, he started to picture himself as a god, more than any other ruler before him. He had temples built just for him, just so he would look like a god, and just so people would pray to him when his days were over. But the real star of the show, at least for historians, was Ramses II's fourth son, who lived between 1281 and 1225 BC, known as the first Egyptologist, Khamenwestis. That's a long name. He built and restored many ancient tombs and began writing down a bunch of histories, and is really important when looking back on Ramses' reign and the reigns beforehand. Without his writing and without his appreciation for the old Egyptian culture and the restoring of old tombs and ancient sites, we might not have some of the amazing Egyptian architecture we do today. He also really expanded on his father's religious personality and cult following, which is to say a lot. Ramses II would be later known to generations as the great ancestor. He reigned so long and outlived so many of his children and wives that when he eventually died at the ripe old age of 96, which was nearly double of the average Egyptian's lifespan, there's writings to show that people feared the end of the world. They knew no other ruler than Ramses II. He was the pharaoh to be. Well, after this, we see the sharp decline in Egyptian culture, unfortunately. With his successor, Ramses III, who ruled between 1186 and 1155 BC, he followed most of the policies of his father. And by this time, Egypt's great wealth and great prosperity was noticed around the world, especially by those called the Sea People. So I'm going to go on a personal tangent right here. I love the Sea People. They seem so incredibly interesting. Although so little is known about them, they have sort of, I think it's the mystery, the element of mystery that really draws me to them. They're like no other culture, really, in the fact that we have no idea anything about them. We know nothing about them. Where are they from? Where do they go? I don't know. Cotton Eye Joe. They are believed to come from the South Aegean Sea, maybe from Crete or some of the islands there, but within records of Crete, and especially the Minoan civilization, which we'll get to soon, they're not referenced. They're not mentioned, for at least the tablets we can read, which is, I believe, Linear A. It might be Linear B. One of those we can read, the other one we can't. So it could have references in the one we can't read, but, you know, that's tricky. But they started raiding the Egyptian coast, and they were, if anything, the Vikings of the ancient world. Except we know more, although not still not a lot, about the Vikings. Ramses II actually defeated them in a naval battle, which held them back for a while. But after word that Ramses had passed and Ramses III took the throne, they thought it was a perfect opportunity to strike. And that they did, raiding the coast and other Bronze Age civilizations, especially the collapse of the near the collapse of the Bronze Age, which is an amazing topic. Like, it is absolutely fascinating, and I'll have to do an episode sometime, but it doesn't really fit into this season. Well, with the fall of the Sea People, especially after the Battle of Xios, I don't know how to say it. It's X-O-I-S in 1187, which 1176, wow, which finally brought an end to the Sea People's reign of terror, if you will. Although only lasting 2 years, it was pretty devastating to the Egyptian economy. There was not much they could do. I mean, the people were unhappy, the people were revolting, and a lot of destruction happened. And unfortunately, a lot of writing is... We don't have a lot of writing. We don't have a lot of records from that time. Well, Egyptian culture and the original Egyptian period, we kind of get lost. Like, nothing really happens. Life starts to suck for the Egyptian people. By the time Ramses XI, who reigns between 1107 and 1077 BC, ends, which marks the end of the 20th dynasty of Egypt, the Egyptian government is so incredibly weakened by corruption and the clergy who, after Ramses and Tutankhamun's reforms, had gained so much wealth in Upper Egypt, that the government eventually kind of folded in on itself, creating just a weak state of its, and a weak shell of itself. Well, that would change. Under the Kushite king, Pai, who reigned between 752 and 722 BC, Egypt was once again unified, and the culture flourished. But, unfortunately, in 671 BC, the Assyrians began their invasion of Egypt, which was relatively easy as it was kind of a shell of its former self, as I said previously. Unfortunately, the Assyrians had no long-term plans for Egypt. They weren't going to console their power, they weren't going to make it a state, so they kind of raided it and left. Once they left, they kind of abandoned Egypt in a weaker state than it's ever seen before, which ultimately made Persia, when Persia rolled up, it was just all too easy. And fun fact, at the Battle of Pelusium in 525 BC, which was the final battle that sealed the fate for Egypt to fall under Persian rule, knowing the Persians, knowing their reverence for cats, in Egyptian culture, because cats were seen like gods. They were seen as embodiments of the gods. Knowing the reverence of cats to the Egyptians, the Persians would put cats on their shields and even drove cats in front of their advancing army so the Egyptians couldn't attack. Well, of course, once the cats fled, because, you know, people are charging, the Egyptians were already so morally conflicted about attacking cats, even though it was on their shields and not an actual being, that they lost and eventually surrendered. Well, Egyptian culture kind of fell and mixed in with Persian culture, yet the overlining idea of being Egyptian remained. Although just under a different banner, Egyptians saw themselves as Egyptians and not quite Persians. But in 323, once Alexander the Great of Macedon, or Macedon, came by and started conquering the rest of the Persian Empire, he was let in as the Great Liberator. And his general, Ptolemy I, after the unfortunate death of Alexander in Babylon, Ptolemy I brought back Alexander's body to Egypt and started the Ptolemaic dynasty. Well, I'm not going to go any further. I think we've covered most of ancient Egypt. Of course, we have so much more to talk about, and there's so much more history left in Egypt, such as the establishment of Alexandria and the growth of Ptolemaic Egypt and its importance in world history, which we'll get to later, but unfortunately not today. Well, what do I think about Egypt? As I said earlier in the beginning of the episode, I'm really interested in Egyptian culture. Egyptian culture is like nothing else. It has its own ins and outs. There's so much there, but it is so incredibly old, yet it's reflective of every culture we see before, and we see every culture again. Just like every culture, there's no culture that doesn't... There's no cultures that are expressly unique. Maybe they have a different language, maybe they have a different customs, culture, religion. Yes, but they all fund the same thing. They all eventually collapse. They all have political instability at some point. There's bound to be a few civil wars. People die, wars happen. There's generally the same timeline. And Egypt is a perfect template for what you can see in future nations. Maybe it's a shorter timeline than nearly 5,000 years, but it's still relatively the same idea. Now, the Egyptians today are only really revered for their mummies and their pyramids, yet there's so many amazing things to come out of Egypt. The beginning of an actual mythology and the establishment, the real establishment of a popular, if you will, pantheon of gods, which we can get to in a later episode, as I mentioned earlier, but not today. Egypt is seen as the beginning of life, the beginning of culture, and is the apex idea of what civilization is, especially in a river valley. What else is really, really interesting with Egypt over Mesopotamia, because they kind of correlated in the same era, and you might be asking, why was Mesopotamia a bunch of fragmented city-states such as Uruk, Babylon eventually became a central power, but Egypt was a central unified, I say that big air quotes, unified power for most of its history? Well, it's pretty simple. You control the waterways. I mean, once you control how people transport, how people eat, how people exist, then you have complete control of them. They also, what is perfectly easy is Mesopotamian Tigris and Euphrates flood very unpredictably, yet the Nile floods every year like clockwork. So the rulers could have easily said, yeah, that's me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, I'm cool. And that just makes a perfect scenario where people rely on you. People will start to believe that, and then they will rely on the rulers to give them substance. Well, another example is the Tigris and Euphrates. They aren't just two rivers. There's a bunch of there's a network of rivers in between it, in between them. And that is that's really crucial, because with all of that, it's really hard to control, at least for an ancient civilization. Yet the Nile, maybe there's a few offshoots, but it's generally just a straight line. Like, a guy with a few boats patrolling up and down can control the entire thing. It's really crazy to think that Egyptian culture lived so long and produced such a legacy. I'd argue a legacy that isn't matched until maybe the Romans or Greeks. It's one of the apex classical civilizations. Well, I mean, I think that's about time. That's about our time here, folks. I'm going to leave you on a source, World History on YouTube has an amazing video on Egypt. I honestly, if you want to learn more about the topic, I'd recommend giving it a watch. It goes over the New Kingdom, Old Kingdom, Middle Kingdom, not in that order, but you know, it should be old, middle, new, whatever. In that, they go over it really well, and I think like if you want to learn more, that's a good place to start. There's so many resources on Egypt, and honestly, it's quite incredible that most of the ancient ruins are still standing today. Well, that's about enough time for today. Well, I hope you guys will join me next week when we go over the Hittites, their lost culture, and honestly, unknown history, which is quite a shame. They're pretty rad. My name's Jack Baribeau, and this has been Halfway History.